Voices Radio Network.
The views and opinions of Muscle Minds is for entertainment and educational purposes only.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Better than he was before. Better, stronger, faster.
Welcome to Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson and Scott McNally, part of the Advices Radio Network, a new voice in bodybuilding podcasting. Welcome back to Muscle Minds. I'm Scott McNally, and with me, as always, Dr. Scott Stevenson. What's up, man? How you been, brother?
I'm good, bud. I'm looking forward to this. We've already got a rapid pace of banter going. This is definitely going to be a different type show than we've done before, so it's going to be fun.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
Now, I think you and I both listened to this gentleman on previous podcasts. He's been all over the place.
A term he would probably admit we use loosely.
Yeah, let's just the background. Break on to it. We've got Dave Pulcinella with us, the Pulcinator. What's up, man? How you been?
What's up, guys? I'm sitting here sipping my coffee. I'm so fucking tired. I have a habit of doing this. I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, right? I do my fasted cardio. I eat breakfast, and then I go back to bed. So, like, it's like when I get up again, I'm exhausted. I have to drink a cup of coffee, which I'm doing now, because I want to give you guys the best answers I can. So I need some caffeine.
That's like living the dream right there. That's like when you were 16, you dreamt that you would live the life where you could do that. You know, like get up, do your cardio, and like go back to bed, get up and train later. And
when I opened up Pulse Nutrition, was 24, 25 years ago. When I started that business, I made sure that the schedule was such that I could live the exact day, bodybuilding day, that I wanted to, perfectly down to the letter. I could get up, I could do my cardio, eat my breakfast, get all my meals in, not have a problem, take a nap in the middle of the night, everything. So, and still make money. So if you can design your own life, that's how you want to do it.
Yeah, of course.
I think that's what you do too, isn't it, Scott? You got your life set up the way you want it to be able to be, you know, do everything you want to do, right?
I don't want to brag, but I'll go one step further. I don't do cardio, so I'm good to go. I just remove that whole thing from my scenario. But
just remove that.
Yeah, of course.
Frees up so much time.
He doesn't need to, Dave. Scott is like shredded year round. Crazy vascularity.
Well, that's a genetic luxury we all wish we could have.
Yeah. Well, I also don't eat a lot of carbohydrate. I manage it. It wasn't always that way, but
Really?
I walk my dog. Yeah, you know, it's really not. You know, it's I walk my dog. That's what I always tell you. You do cardio, I walk my dogs. They pull pretty hard.
He walks his dog. Why is he shopping? You know, I pushed the shopping cart. I did some gardening earlier today. So
you should see him. It's a rapid pace. I think I hit like 102 heart rate the other day.
What do you eat for carbs, Scott? How many carbs a day do you get on a training day?
A training day, I load up. I have to go and tally it up because it's changing all the time. But
What's load up mean to you, though?
Oh, it can be like after a workout, I'll have a box of cereal with 100 grams of whey isolate. Yeah. I'll have, you know, 500 calorie interworkout with, more than that. Probably 75 grams of protein, another 150 grams of carbs in an interworkout, and then post workout might be pretty much a whole box of cereal.
What kind of cereal?
That's a good question.
that's the secret that I'm unwilling to reveal. Is it Captain Crunch?
Is it Captain Crunch?
Rice Krispies? Cocoa Puffs?
You know, Captain Crunch doesn't work as a post workout cereal unless it's got crunch berries.
Is that true?
There are scientific studies on this.
Huh.
Fuck. No wonder.
The crunch berries are really what provide the benefit.
Dave, where were you 2 years ago? I wasted 6 months of
gaining. You really did. Crunch berries. Key.
Yeah.
Post-workout nutrition. Not Pop-Tarts.
Yeah. No. I tried. Pop-Tarts have worked for me, but maybe, you know, that was could have been placebo effect.
You know, I want to let everybody know, too, since we probably do have a lot of listeners who already know who Dave is, but if they don't, I mean, I first discovered Dave, and it must have been at least a decade ago now, watching the Raising the Bar films. If you guys haven't seen Raising the Bar, you need to check that out. I'll tell you what, this was a time, for me at least, where there weren't many bodybuilding documentaries out there. There was like the boring, and no offense to Mitsuro, because he was doing some awesome stuff for his time. You know, but they were kind of slow moving, and you had to really love Jay Cutler to sit through that, you know?
Yeah, it was in real time.
Yeah.
It was in
real, but then Dave's brother, Mike Pulcinella, came out with Raising the Bar 1, which you guys kind of, you discovered that by accident pretty much, right?
Totally by accident. What he wanted to do was just make a little documentary type film of me and what I do to get ready for a show. So he followed me around for 20 weeks as I prepared for the East Coast Classic and Delaware State Championships and filmed everything that I did. He was there constantly. He was ubiquitous. So at the end, you know, after a while, I completely forgot he was there and just things unfolded naturally. And if you remember the story, I swear we couldn't have written it any better.
Yeah.
Because after the entire, I don't want to give too much away, but I'm about to. But after the entire prep, I show up to the show and they don't let me compete. Mm. Because I had won the overall the year prior. So they actually tell me that I can't compete after this entire prep, after filming this, all this, my meals and everything else I do leading up to a show, they weren't going to let me compete. So, I mean, and in the end, they do. I win the overall. My girlfriend Jen wins the overall. So it's like, you know, it's like a Rocky story.
It really was.
Yeah. And that's an interesting thing. That was always the rule of thumb. Like I had years ago when I lived in Arizona, I had won the overall at the Arizona 1 year. And you just, if you win, you just don't go back. You just don't.
Yeah.
You're just trophy hunting, you know?
Well,
but in your case, I think there was some reasons, and I'll let you explain those. But that rule of thumb, it was actually written into the rules at the Delaware, it sounds like.
It was written into the rules. And the guy who was running the show was a former cop, and he was like really by the book. He knew me personally for years and was a friend of mine. He was going to send me home. Whew. He said, well, maybe you can guest pose. I'm like, guest pose?
Yeah.
I didn't come to guest pose, man. I came here to win. And back in the day, I remember like back-to-back winners. You know, this guy won the Delaware 4 years in a row. This guy won the East Coast 5 years in a row, and he's defending his title. What happened to defending your title? Yeah. You can't do that. So I think what ended up happening was someone ended up calling Jim Mannion and talking to him about it, and they came up with a compromise where I could only do the East Coast part.
Oh, it's combo show. Yeah, I've done those before too.
So they let me do the East Coast, but not the Delaware part.
Right. Oh,
so I can't remember.
Do you remember Rusty Jeffers, Dave?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
So Rusty's from Arizona, and you know, for years he was trying to get his card, which obviously mm-hmm. eventually got. And he used to get all sorts of shit because he wanted to qualify for the USAs or whatever pro qualifier he was doing, and he'd just do the Arizona, you know, because the timing was perfect. It's right there. It's like literally a week before the USAs every year.
Right.
And he'd win. He just kept on winning, you know, or taking people's at that time, they're only top two would nationally qualify. So he was bumping somebody out of a national qualification potentially, and people would get pissed at him, you know. But it's like otherwise, you're asking him to, you know, travel to California, you know, spend an extra $1,000 or something like that at least for all the expenses to get there and compete. Whereas he lives in Phoenix. The show's in Phoenix. You know, he'd get up there and drive over in the morning, get his qualification, and then be done with it.
Yeah, I don't see the problem. I really don't.
Yeah. So,
but that was written into the rule book, unbeknownst to me, so it was a shock to me.
I heard they're going to be changing some stuff with the NPC. I heard that so it's only going to be the top two that qualify now.
Oh, they're bringing it back that way. Good.
Yeah. And from what I understand, if you win first or second place, you're done at the state level.
Okay.
So that's my understanding of it.
You permanently qualify or
just for the year, eventually? But you're done for the year. So you can't come back and, you know, do show after show type thing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wait, pro card's too easy lately. It's just, it doesn't mean what it used to mean to have a pro card.
Now,
I knew this topic would come up. I was just writing this out to send you, Scott. Yes, go on, Dave, please.
Yeah.
You used to have to be the last man standing.
And that was the case. So raising the bar too, you went to Masters Nationals, right?
I went to Masters Nationals, yeah.
And you've looked out of this world. How many pro cards were there, though, at that time?
Overall.
Yeah, overall.
That's it. Overall. Yeah. And then North Americans, I won the heavyweight class of the North Americans 3 years in a fucking row.
Whew.
And lost the overall 3 years in a row, and therefore did not get a pro card. Back then, you had to win the overall. Now, I mean, up until now, you know, the class winner, the second place winner, you know, they gave away a third pro card to somebody else. They're giving away pro cards to the audience members. I think my sister got a pro card for showing up.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, it just waters it that out. Yeah.
There was a woman who was ushering people in, and she had a nice set of biceps. They gave her a card.
She gave her a card. They gave her a card. Yeah.
She was in the 70 plus. They just walked up there. You know, she filled out the forms. She got a pro card.
We have to keep in mind that it is a business.
Yeah.
Each card, there's a $200 annual fee attached to it. So you got to factor that in. You know, you really do. But at the same time, where's the integrity of the thing that you're promoting here? I mean, it's just. It gets to the point where the pro card has to mean something.
Yeah.
And there are guys now, I saw some pictures from the Nationals. There were some guys walking away with pro cards who I swear I would have creamed on stage at the Delaware 10 years. And he's a pro. You know, from my standpoint, that kind of goes up my ass about a yard. As you can imagine.
Yeah. The thing that's always intrigued me is that I haven't been able to find a mission statement for the NPC or even the IFBB where there's something about, Google, maybe someone can find it. I've looked, where there's some sort of standard of physique competition that they're designed to uphold. Like, this is the purpose of this organization. And we're trying to, like, we have this sort of essential ideal of bodybuilding, but we want to keep in place through our competition, and we won't slide from that ideal.
They have no such thing?
I don't think there is a mission statement. No, I think the mission, I mean, like many businesses, I think the NPC is technically a nonprofit, but the mission is to make money, you know, right. Like you said. So, you know, that's kind of why this happens. And they're doing a great job at it, you know.
Right.
I'd like to see how many out of curiosity, how the sort of ratio of pro card winners to number of shows or average number of shows each pro card winner competes in afterwards. Because I think there are a lot of people who get their cards and even for good reason, they got them in there and they're not going to be competitive against the best of the best.
Right.
Or there's so many competitors, they might even be pretty dang good, but you know, there's just so many of them.
Right.
So it's like, what's the point? You're just paying, you know, and you're not, there's prize money isn't worth it. So you are a quote unquote professional, but what that really means isn't nearly to what it used to mean, obviously.
Not at all. Not at
all.
It doesn't mean anything. When I was gave up on turning pro, I think right around that point in time is when it started to get watered down. And now I just, you know, people are like, you need to make a comeback. Well, first of all, I've injured 3 out of my 4 limbs in the past 18 months point that they're just mutilated, first of all. And second of all, it wouldn't mean that much to me to get the card at this point.
Yeah.
You know, it just wouldn't.
I've heard you talk about that. I mean, you could. How old are you now, Dave?
53.
Yeah, so you could probably, you know, if you set your mind to it, I have no doubt knowing – because I've seen all 3 raising the bars. I mean, I've listened to you. I no doubt that if you wanted to, you could come back and create a physique that would win a card somehow.
I could. I'd have to kill myself doing it.
But you do it if you're motivated to.
What's that?
You would do it if you were motivated to.
If I was motivated, but that's never going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just not, dude. I would have to spend an entire year busting my ass. I've spent enough summers not going to the beach because I'm eating out of Tupperware every 2 hours in my house.
Yep.
Hermit. I mean, just way too many of my life's summers, months and months, doing it for that sole purpose of getting that car. I get it. I did it. I have no regrets. I didn't get the car. I don't care. But for me to come back, I would have to nearly, seriously, and I wouldn't want to settle for anything less than what I presented 10 years ago, which is when I retired. It would have to be at least equal to or better than. So at this point, it's really a dumb idea to bombard my body with the stressors that I have to be what I need to be at 53. I kill myself. For what? For what? Okay, I get a pro card. Then what am I going to do with that? I'm not going to be too tired to compete in the show.
Yeah. I mean, really, the thing that you once sought no longer exists.
That's correct. Very well said. Yeah. What I sought no longer exists anyway.
Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, I'm not close to being the competitor you once were, never have been. But I'm sorrowful for that. It's kind of like the golden fleece is gone. It's like, fuck, it sucks.
It's funny, too, because when we were starting off back in the day and we were starting bodybuilding, and it was a cult thing to a great degree. I mean, when you met another person who competed, you're like, you compete, too? It's like a kinship. Wow.
Yeah, right.
Everybody competes. Everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody has a coach or is a coach. So back then, it was like this little fraternity. And we used to think that we wanted it to be bigger. Oh, man, we, you know, if only bodybuilding were more mainstream and not such a cult sport. We thought we wanted that. Now we know we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want that. Because what it's become is, like you said, very sad.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just the nature of things. They always are going to change. You know, nothing's going to stay the same. It's just kind of how it is.
It has to evolve. You know, the money-making prospect back in the 70s and 80s, when all you had was male bodybuilding, and that's it. So who showed up was just the male bodybuilders, and that's the money you made. But the brighter minds saw an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's come up with women's divisions. Let's come up with bikini where you don't have to have muscle. Let's come up with physique where you don't have to have legs. How many bodybuilders are out there who don't have legs and don't compete because they know they don't have legs?
Hmm.
Let's create a division where you don't need legs to compete, and you can still get a pro card without having legs. How about the guys who haven't gotten big enough really to compete against the top national level guys? Well, if they're still small, but they're shapely, they can do classic physique now. They don't have to wait. Like, I had to wait a decade before I can actually compete against real bodybuilders. Now, I can get on stage as a classic physique competitor way before I've reached actual bodybuilding status.
Sure.
Or size.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really smart of them to create all these divisions for all the people out there who liked to do what they wanted to do to the degree they wanted to do it, but felt that they couldn't step on stage as a bodybuilder.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a lot of people saying now that there's a trend toward sizing down. You know, we see guys that are switching from bodybuilding to classic, and that they're saying, you know, they don't want to go through, you know, putting the drugs in their body and putting that, you know, putting the stress on their body. And I think about it, you know, you look at a guy like Cody Montgomery.
Right. He's doing that.
Yeah, he did the Arnold, you know, against a lot of really tough guys for his first showing. And, you know, of course he isn't going to beat like Kai Greene. That's what Dave Palumbo was saying. You know, of course he's not going to. But if he were to put in the time, he could add a lot of size and maybe be competitive at that level down the road. But people are kind of saying, like, well, maybe he just doesn't want to put all that stuff into his body. What do you think about that, Dave? I mean, do you think that this is going to be beneficial to bodybuilding? Because I think, like, at the other end, we don't want to see everybody dying, right?
Well, that you definitely don't want to see. When you talk about any extreme sport,
there's
casualty involved. You know, I mean, let's face it, people have died in the boxing ring. Mm. People die downhill skiing. They die race car driving. They die doing their sport. And bodybuilding's no different. We are singled out, however, as being reckless, and irresponsible with our lives and our health, more so than these other people. You can get paralyzed on a football field.
Sure.
But everyone's okay with that because they like football. Yeah. Football's mainstream. They can relate to it. They love it. They sit down on Sunday nights and they watch it. If someone gets paralyzed from the neck down playing football, it's somehow justified because it's football. When someone drops dead body, they're like, oh, this is a ridiculous waste of a life. You know, he was doing all these drugs and he was being irresponsible. Every elite athlete in a extreme sport does the same damn thing. But with bodybuilding, because it's so small, it's still relatively small. I mean, look at the Olympia and the crowds it draws versus the Super Bowl.
Sure.
You can't really justify it. There's no real money being made. There's no real money being made. At the lower levels, you're just competing for a plastic trophy. So it kind of gets ridiculous that you're dropping dead for what? Just to be the biggest, lumpiest guy on stage, get a few bucks. So I understand that that's why the spotlight's on bodybuilding. For that. But yeah, I mean, downsizing, if it brings back the shape and proportion that existed in the 80s and 90s, I think it's a great idea because the physiques are just, and like Arnold says, they're just disgustingly ugly. The bodybuilding was about beauty at one time. Proportions, shape, symmetry, along with hardness. And, you know, at the upper levels, it's just gotten so away from that. And, of course, it's from the drug use. Escalating drug use.
Yeah. The interesting thing about this is that depending on what sports you're doing, it's viewed differently. That's a societal perspective.
Right.
And so it's what society says is okay or what matches their, you know, the norm, so to speak, to some degree, is what guides people's actions. And the thing back in the day, this is why bodybuilding was or had been so much of a cult sort of endeavor, is that these are people that just, you know, you just don't give a shit. You have some goal, physique in mind that you're shooting for. This is what you want. You're doing it kind of because, maybe because you're a little fucked in the head. That's highly possible.
Gotta be a little fucked in the head. You gotta be a lot fucked in the head.
Yeah, that's the part of it.
Seriously, but to be a great bodybuilder, you can't be sane.
Yeah, and people, everyone who's done great things in this world, they've all. I mean, some of the greatest scientists, some of the greatest authors, they've been off their rockers.
Off
the greatest
thinkers, rocker. Absolutely.
Yeah,
many people have. Say, you know, moderation in all things. I'm like, yeah, moderation in all things if you want to be mediocre.
Right. Galileo, you know, was a crazy man. Darwin was socially inept, you know. So we revere these people after the fact, but you know, they would have been ostracized. So that's the thing now is that the smart marketers recognize that you could take someone who may have a little bit of that. It's part of all of us to try to like seek something new and different. That's about what I think is unique about humans is that we, you know, we're kind of roamers, we're wanderers, you know, we're looking in some way to expand our horizons, even seek out altered states of consciousness. And that's built into us, but we also function with this in these societal perspectives on what's okay. And when you've got, all these divisions that are being set up that can allow you to kind of get recognition. I'm a bodybuilder. You know, here's my Instagram profile. I look good. Like that taps into that one aspect of human nature, but also makes it okay too because we're fitting within societal norms. And it's almost it seems like a subtle form of brainwashing in a certain way, because I think if you took, I always think of things, not always, but often I think of things. What would happen if a given person, like, you know, maybe there's some kid in the gym who, you know, he's taking pictures of himself all the time, put on Instagram, you know, and it's, you're sort of like, oh, Jesus, man, this is just awful. I wonder, how would I have been if I had been born in his shoes?
Right, exactly, right?
You know, would I be like that? And how would he be if he had been born in my shoes? He might be like this, you know, hardcore, I just grind away in my garage by myself all the time type of guy.
After all, we are a victim of our surroundings and our upbringing, you know? So
nature and nurture.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to hear that.
Yeah, so those different divisions are so smart because they make it socially acceptable to do things which once were a bit odd.
Right.
You know, you'd be seen it's completely egotistical and, you know, self-absorbed and narcissistic, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, those are all adjectives that describe bodybuilding for sure.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Not inaccurate.
Yeah. But now there's a larger collective community, which, you know, makes people that self-checking of like, Jesus, yeah, I do look at myself every time I walk past the mirror. Yeah. Like, no, that's okay, because I got to add this to my Instagram story, you know?
Now it's like your workout didn't happen unless you post it. Right? If you would post your workout, it really didn't happen.
Yeah, right.
You can't let one pump go by without capturing it on film and posting it on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dave, do you think you could have done what you did having not been quite as extreme? You know, you said like you missed all those summers on the beaches and all that. Could you have done it slightly differently and still been able to maintain?
The truth is, I don't know. The truth is, I don't know. But the way I am,
yeah,
I can't do that. Like, I can't go to I didn't want to go to the beach and have to lug all my Tupperware. It was just a pain in the ass. Like,
sure.
I either want to go to the beach, drink my ass off, have fun, pass out with my face in the sand. You know what I mean? Or stay home with my Tupperware and eat every 2 hours on the dot and focus on my goals and visualize winning the trophy. But I don't want to try to combine the two. I think for me, and I know a lot of people who can do that. Yeah. They go to the beach, they enjoy themselves, they eat every 2 hours. But for me, it would be the total distraction from what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
A, and B, it would be just a tease of what going to the beach is supposed to be like.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of two shitty feelings happening at the same time. I'm not focusing on my goals here. I'm at the beach trying to enjoy the beach. At the same time, this is not how I enjoy the beach. I'd rather just be home. So, yeah, that's how my brain works. It's either 100% or zero.
All right. Well,
you sort of seek purity of experience. Is that correct, Dave?
What's that?
You sort of seek out purity of experience.
Yes, regardless of what the experience is, that is exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly. Yeah. So I wasn't going to do much on a social level or celebratory anything until I had the trophy in my hand, and I almost felt like I deserved to win more the more I suffered.
Sure.
So I'm home living this life of a monk for 20 weeks in seclusion, doing nothing but going to work, going to the gym, getting up in the morning, doing cardio, work, gym, cardio, meals, work, gym, meals, cardio. If I do that for 20 weeks, who else is out there doing that? Nobody.
Yeah.
Who else is doing this? Nobody. So cosmically, I deserve that trophy more than anyone else. So that's really how I viewed it. Is that the truth? I don't fucking know. Could I have done more socially? I guess, but my brain doesn't work that way. It was all or nothing, fellas. So I was in or I was out.
I feel like the mindset you're talking about, that's kind of like what I was brought up on and what made me love bodybuilding. I feel like today it's not quite there. People are just trying to, they just want the result.
It's not there at all.
You know, they just want the result. They want to see how much less can I do it? I see two kinds of people. There's the people that say like, what more can I do to be my best?
Yeah.
Or what more can I get away with and still be good?
Because I take on clients now, you know, I've been taking on competitive clients for 24 years.
Yeah.
So if anyone has a perspective on how things have changed, I see now people who want to compete. This happens all the time. This is crazy. Listen to this shit. A young kid will come into my office, or a girl, and they'll say, I'll be like, what is your goal? Oh, I want to compete. Okay, have you been to a show? No. Have you watched one on YouTube? No. All right, well, can you show me your version of the quarter turns real quick? Quarter turns, what are they?
Mm.
What are they? Well, can you do a couple mandatories so I can check out your shit? I'm not sure what a mandatory. What do you know about this sport that you claim you want to do? Why did you say you want to compete? Well, my friend competed. But do you know what it is? Do you even know what happens on stage?
What's social status.
Heard of you? What it is? It'd be like going to a tennis pro and saying, yeah, I'd like to play tennis. And they say, well, did you bring your racket? And you say, right. Racket? What's that? What's a racket?
Yeah.
It's exactly like that. So I don't understand, but that happens more often than not. I'm like, these people, I don't know where they're getting the idea they want to compete, but they don't even know what it is. They have no idea what a mandatory. By the time I was 13 years old, I can do a full posing routine. Emulating Arnold and Lou, you know, from Iron.
You guys had bodybuilding competitions down in someone's basement in your neighborhood, didn't you?
I put on my own bodybuilding competition in my cousin Steve's basement.
Yeah.
6 or 7 kids from the neighborhood showed up. They all had posing routines prepared. We were teenage. We were like 16 years old, 15 or 16 years old.
That's awesome.
They had all. They knew how to do their mandatories. These were like local kids who lifted weights.
Yeah.
And liked bodybuilding, but they knew how to do their poses. They went through little routines. Yeah. So. It's changed that way for sure. What were we talking about originally?
We were talking about you, talking about how awesome you are and how glad we are to have you on the show.
Dude, so yeah. You know,
Dave, I was going to say, I think you know this, but that thing that they want when they say, well, they want to compete is that that sort of social status, that allure that I stand out in the crowd. That's getting more and more elusive to find because there's a million faces on Facebook.
Yes.
And high schools are gigantic and there's just so many chickens in the coop. Everyone wants to be unique. We all are, but it's so hard to feel that way.
And they have no idea the work involved. I'm like, you don't want to look. Competing starts with, I want the physique, not I want to compete. Do you know, are you getting what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Being a bodybuilder should start with, right. I want that physique.
Yeah,
I will do whatever it takes to get that look. Like when I saw Arnold, obviously, I mean, he inspired a million people. When I saw Arnold on Pumping Iron, I said, I want that physique. Then that turned into, over time, I want to take this physique that I've built and compete with it. These kids walk in with not nary a muscle visible anywhere. Like a half a month training experience, and I want to compete. That's like really skipping several steps, isn't it? Don't you want to build a physique first? Then maybe compete? You have to have a fire in your soul to get that physique because it's going to require everything you ever thought you ever had and more to get there. So these kids, they come in and they don't know what they're even asking for. Do you even know what you're asking? Do you have an idea what the diet looks like, what the training looks like, the cardio, how your life is going to have to look for 12 to 20 weeks? No, you don't. Get out of my office. Get out.
But I'm going to play devil's advocate here and sort of an informed one. Like, but Dave, I don't have to train legs if I compete in men's physique. So I'm not going to have to squat, right? That's a good thing.
I will take on a physique for sure.
Yeah,
like but the bodybuilders though.
Yeah, right. But the perspective is, you know, I won't have to squat, and that's a brilliant. You know, we can cover your legs. Even the classic physique. I was just writing about this the other night. Is you know, classic physique at least doesn't limit conditioning. You can be as shredded as you want to be, but then they cover the glutes.
Yeah,
like
I know.
Which is it?
I don't like those
paradox.
I don't like this. I mean, it's classic physique. If it's classic physique, the classic physiques wore posing trunks.
They did. Yeah. They were a little bit bigger back in the day, but you know. So, but I think from the perspective of some of these kids, you can understand they're sort of a, I want to say almost a victim of their environment in that you can go on, if you find the right mirror and the right lighting and the right bathroom, absolutely. You can take a picture that makes you look really good. So you can say, you know, I'm 12 weeks out or 10 weeks out or whatever. You can put together all the pieces that give you what you want as far as sort of like the dopamine reward of like, wow, you're looking great. You know, thumbs up, you know, single arm bicep emoji, all that kind of whatever that looks called.
You can forge whatever reality you want to on social media. It's great. Be whatever you want to be. You don't have to actually be it.
And that's why they're coming to you. They can say that you're training them. I mean, I imagine that maybe must be some of it. You have a lot of prestige. People know who you are, obviously, especially in that area. I mean, you've got to be, you know, I'll toot your horn for you, but you're probably semi-legendary. because well, you've been around for so long. You have to be. You've been a rock there for 24 years, you said.
Yeah.
So it's a big deal to be trained by you. That in and of itself is something that probably brings folks to you. So it's a tough spot you find yourself in. I kind of feel for you, man.
Hey, guys, that said, let's go to a quick break because we're already starting to cover some of the questions we have.
Yeah, we noticed that. Yeah.
We've got a bunch of questions here. I had posted up a thread. Scott shared it. Dave shared it. It's been shared all over Instagram, Facebook, and we are taking advantage of social media and making it our platform to ask questions to Dave. Guys, we'll be right back. We got a whole bunch of questions from there and the advice is important.
This unfortunate man is Stringfellow Bean, world's leading plant expert. And this is Jean Lafitte, world's meanest pirate.
And this is your last chance to tell me, what is a crunchberry?
There's no such thing.
Nom de plume, it say right on this box, Cap'n Crunch cereal with crunchberries. They taste like the strawberry, but they're not the strawberry.
Do they have seeds?
No.
Do they get mushy in milk?
No, they stay crunchy.
Then they're not berries.
You make the fool of me, I will.
You'll put up your patty paws, that's what you'll do, Jean Lafitte.
Yeah!
Cap'n Crunch, just in time.
Anytime's the time for Cap'n Crunch, especially Cap'n Crunch with crunchberries. It's got corn for crunch and oats for punch, and crunchberries for that little extra.
Monsieur Lafitte, now I know what crunchberries are.
What? What?
They're swell.
Cap'n Crunch and Cap'n Crunch with crunchberries from Quaker.
Hey guys, this is John Meadows.
And this is Scott Stevenson.
I invite everybody to come out to our seminar, Bodybuilding Fact and Fiction.
Thursday, March 1st at the Doubletree Suites in downtown Columbus. Just before the Arnold Classic festivities, come on in and meet John Meadows, IFBB Pro, the Mountain Dog himself, and Dr. Scott Stevenson. Stay all day from 9 a.m. to noon, then after lunch, 1 o'clock till 4. Starting out with an a.m. pancake breakfast, then all-day lectures. Q&A as time permits, plus best bar ever, and pre-workout from Granite Supplements Speed Force to get you on your way to the gym. For more information, go to drscottstevenson.com. That's drscottstevenson.com. And hope to see you guys there. If you've enjoyed Scott Stevenson's contribution to Muscle Minds, you can learn more about him, his products, and his services at fortitudetraining.net. And if you order any of his products or services, you get a free subscription to his message board where he answers questions daily. Go to fortitudetraining.net to learn more about all these products, services, and events offered by Scott Stevenson.
Okay, guys, and we are back. Dr. Scott Stevenson, Dave Pulcinella, and myself, Scott McNally. Let's start up from the social media questions we have. And this is something we already started touching on, but I'll be interested to go a little bit deeper. This question is from Matt Marshall. He says, Dave, you've been around a while. What did competitors do back in the day that you think needs to be brought back? And also, what are guys doing today that's an evolution from the old school way of bodybuilding?
I really think that the main distinction now versus then is what we just touched on before, how I noticed that when we would diet, we would put ourselves on lockdown for 12 weeks. Back then it was 12 weeks that you would do. You would do a 12-week prep. And we'd put ourselves on lockdown, you know? Every 2 hours on the dot, we'd be eating, and the cardio was in the morning, fasted no matter what. And it was very precise, very precision. My friend Kenny Weiss, he didn't have the best genetics, but man, he would always go and shred it to the bone. And he really taught me what needs to be done to win a show, how the diet works, how cardio has to be done. Well, for most of us, son of a bitch. for most of us, I mean, he would get on the stair stepper and he'd be on there for over an hour, just killing that thing. And there'd be a puddle of sweat around him. His work ethic was amazing. I'm not saying that people don't have a work ethic these days.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that. But as the numbers have grown, so has the number of people who don't do what I just described. So I think the old school, if you did a show, you were doing a show. I'm not saying this for everybody. There was still junk. In every show, you had junk. A couple people that had no business being there. The second part of the question, I really think, has mostly to do with the chemistry. There are so many more things to choose from. Mm. The dosage is now, it's like, I remember I was talking to a guy in the audience of a national level show one time. He was competing that day. And he told me that he was on 4 total grams a week. Mm. I'm thinking, holy shit, that is a huge amount of gear. I was doing half or maybe a third of that. Now, I know several people who do 10 grams a week.
Jesus.
Ooh. Not just one, several.
This is not your friend Boston.
Hello?
Oh, okay.
Hello? He's actually doing more than that right now.
Is he? Has he gone back to that? I thought he assumed that.
Right now. This is not something to make public. I just made it public for him.
okay. Sorry, Boston. I thought he gave that up and went back, you know. We had good success with the lower doses and of all. That's what I'd heard somewhere, but
he outlined his current protocol for me the other day. And it's just I just my jaw dropped. I'm like, Boston, what are you doing? I'm just gonna do it for 6 weeks. Well, I'm like, why don't you just do half of that for 12 weeks?
Yeah.
You know? He goes, well, I just want to see what I can do. I'm gonna switch compounds after 6 weeks. I'm going to do 12,000 milligrams of other stuff. I'm like, Boston, stop. Just stop.
Oh, my goodness.
Stop the craziness. So that's not uncommon. It's okay. Not uncommon. I mean, it's crazy it is to say. So the physiques, now I found, and this is something that's been trending over the last 10 years in my experience. I started noticing about a decade ago where people would try, and you said this earlier, try to see what they could get away with.
Yeah.
So if they up the dose of this, they can remove that. If they up the dose of this, can I remove that? So more flexibility with the diet, right? Who wants to eat 6 foods? Who the fuck wants to eat 6 foods for 20 weeks? Nobody. Who wants to have to get up at dawn's butt crack to do cardio? Nobody. So we found ways to not have to eat 6 foods every 2 hours. We found ways around the fasted cardio. And of course, we found scientific studies to back all this up, so we feel good about it. Mm. And we just increased the dosage of this, that, and the other thing so that we still grow or get leaner. But there is a distinct, I think both of you guys would agree with this, there is a distinct difference in the way a physique looks, the final product, when it's been achieved through work and food versus drugs and less work.
Yeah,
absolutely.
There is a distinct difference in that crispness, in that look. I can't really put it into words, but there is a difference. And it always looks better when you go the more difficult route. In life, how many things that you achieve would you achieve if you took the easy way out? What worth having isn't worth busting your ass over? Anything. It includes bodybuilding.
And Dave, if it was easy, let me ask you, would you have ever wanted it to begin with?
Nope. In fact, when I was 10, 11, 12, I was confronted with this fork in the road. I was amazingly talented on the piano.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
It came really easily to me. My dad bought an upright piano when I was 10 or 11. I just sat down and started playing songs. I could have been a concert pianist, there's no doubt in my mind. If I had worked as hard as I did towards bodybuilding at the piano, it was a done deal.
And let me explain this a little bit more too, because Dave isn't exaggerating here. Dave, you can hear something and then just translate that instantly. Am I right?
Translated pretty instantly. Yeah. I have what they call a perfect pitch where you can hear a note and identify it. Yeah. If I hear like a whistle blow, I can say, oh, that's an A, you know, that's an A flat.
Yeah. You know, so my friend, you know, my friend VJ, he's the same way.
He'll hear a
song and he plays it on the guitar that day.
Exactly. That's something you're born with. So I was confronted with this fork. I could pursue music, which would really have come easy to me. Or after I saw Arnold and Pumping Iron, I can pursue that. Now, at the time, I had the physique of a scarecrow. I had no visible muscle anywhere. I was 12 years old and really emaciated looking. I was the smallest kid in my class. So that pursuing bodybuilding would be the most difficult thing I could do.
Hmm.
I chose that. The path of most resistance. It appealed to me more than the thing that would have come easy to me. Make sense?
So what keeps you doing it then? Yep. I feel like you definitely achieved a physique that most people in the world will never experience. You didn't get tired of it though. You've still been doing it.
You're not competing
now, and you still love it, it seems.
I'm going to say something that's going to blow your mind. I never really liked working out.
What?
Yeah.
Scott, should we just hang up on him now?
I never loved working out. Like, I know guys who just want to be in the gym all day. They love the actual lifting of weights.
Yeah.
I never was in love with it.
Okay.
I did it because I wanted what was on the other end of it.
Mm.
I wanted that physique so bad, but I knew I had to go through what I had to go through to do it. And now you ask me why I continue to do it? Because I don't want to look like a 53-year-old man. I forced myself to go to the gym. And now, with two torn quads and a torn rotator cuff, believe me, it's the last thing I want to do. What I want to do is sit there. I want to sit there, watch television, sip coffee, not move because it feels good. But I make myself go to the gym and hurt because I don't want to be a 53-year-old man. I don't want to look like one. And what I did in the gym, I did out of necessity, not out of love.
Mm.
I love the piano. There were times when I'd be in the middle of my workout and a song would come on the radio and I'd be figuring out in my head how to play it on the piano. So when I got home, I could play it.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? But it was like this dichotomy. I chose the one that was more difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense to me.
I'm sure it's a surprise to find out that I don't love working out. I know. I'm sorry to pull the rug out from under me. But it's true. You know, I was never like this guy who wanted to, oh, I can't wait. That's why it's so easy for me to take 3 months off of everything at the end of every year, which I do.
Mm.
I take three months off of cardio, 3 months off of just to reset my body. And it's easy for me to do that. I just plunge myself into other things. Everyone's like, oh, how do you do that? If I miss a day, I can't stand it. I'm like, fuck that. That's not me.
Yeah, I definitely had an uphill battle. Scott, you had an uphill battle too. From what Lats Casey Reed was telling us, you were pretty small. Do you relate to that?
Not liking to work out?
No. The struggle, the being small, knowing that it was going to be possibly, you know, a huge challenge for you.
Yeah, but I like to work out. So
I do too.
So it was intrinsically rewarding to me.
Yeah.
You know? So I didn't feel it that way. I knew. I mean, I can track my body weight over the, you know, from my first show, you know, up until my last, you know, and it took about 12, 15 years to get to the weight that I've competed at most recently.
Right.
It was a slow climb, you know. Dave, I was going to ask you if you think, so you took the path of most resistance, which I think a lot of times also brings the greatest reward. Do you think that if at that point where you sort of, you know, took that fork in the road towards bodybuilding and, you know, you realize, you know, a lot of hard work's going into this, you don't like to train. I imagine you do your cardio, but it's, you know, probably for the same reasons. If someone had said to you, you know, Dave, here, I've got a cardio box kit and it contains low dose DNP and farm grade growth hormone, et cetera, et cetera. And you could do that as, you know, in place of the hard work of cardio.
Back in the day
when you were younger,
hmm.
before you, you know, when, so you were just, you, so you didn't have cardio as kind of your only option. I think you would have taken the cardio in a box choice.
It depends who was offering it to me.
Hmm.
Do I respect this person's opinion? Is he influential? Because when I was young, I was malleable and impressionable. So that's when you learn what you're going to do. That's when you form your basic paradigm when you're young.
Right.
So, you know, meeting Kenny.
Dan Duchesne.
Huh?
What if it were Dan Duchesne?
Yeah, I might have taken it. Well, Kenny Weiss taught me so early about the work and how the work equals success and how the ones who aren't willing to put in the work. And he impressed that in me. If someone had impressed on me the box, who knows what would have happened? So that's a really good question without a definitive answer, unless it actually happens to you.
All happens.
But I mean, I was presented, yeah. I was presented with a bottle of D-ball, you know, and I took it. Uh-huh. I was like, you know, this guy, really big arms that I used to work with. I'm like, how did you get your arms so big? He goes, well, actually, I really started growing when I started taking these little blue pills.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, really? I want to grow.
Yeah.
I want little blue pills. So I bought my first bottle of little blue pills.
Were they heart-shaped?
They were heart-shaped.
When you said blue, that's what I was leaning toward. Yeah.
They were blue hearts. They were blue hearts. Yeah, I bought them. And you know what I did with them? Nothing. The bottle sat in my bag for a year.
What?
I was just, I didn't want to, I just was resisting going that route for the longest time. And I trained for two shows naturally and I won them. And then I said, well, you know what? I want to go to the next level. It's time to take these blue hearts. And they were expired for that.
I'm sure it didn't matter though.
No, I had other
sort of work.
Yeah, it's still working.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to move on. We got a bunch of questions here, guys.
Let's get to it.
All right. So next one is just a question about what's happening right now with you, Dave. What supplements and vitamins are you currently using, and how's your health? How's your blood pressure?
Do we mean supplements and vitamins, or do we mean quote-unquote supplements?
Well, we could make it interesting and quote-unquote it. I think he meant just like actual over-the-counter stuff, but hey, we're open on this show to anything you want to share.
Yeah, all of it, Dave.
I take a really good, this is the boring part.
Okay.
This is the boring stuff. I take a really good pharma grade absorbable multivitamin called Phytomulti by a company called Metagenics. I take that every day. I take my blood pressure medication. I'm on two right now. I'm trying to get off of one so I can just be on one. I dropped my beta blocker so that I can get my heart rate up when I'm doing cardio, and it really worked. Dude, I was busting my ass and get up to like 110.
Oh, jeez.
It's like, really? So now I'm up to 130. Not a problem.
Nice.
So I was able to get off of that. So that was good. What else am I taking? Not much. That's pretty much it. Supplement-wise, I take, you know, all max whey protein. But, yeah, supplements, vitamins, I don't do much, really. That's a boring question.
Okay, well, how about super supplements then?
Super supplements. I'm very, very, I'm much more conservative, obviously, with that now than I used to be.
Okay.
But I do a test base, 400 milligrams a week of test.
Yeah.
I think is an appropriate amount for me and my age, right? 400 milligrams of EQ, and then I give blood every 10 weeks or so. Just to keep my hemoglobin down, and 400 of Masteron, and that's it. And I do that 1 cc 3 times a week right now.
What's your reasoning on the Masteron?
I like the fact that it helps me. It helps me build clean, water free muscle. I like the anti estrogen properties in it. It's just a good compound. I've always gotten really good results from it.
Do you use the short acting or the long acting mast?
I use the long acting. Nice. All three are long acting.
Okay.
Right now.
Mm-hmm. Right on. Anything you want to add here, Scott?
This is like the morning injections for Boston, but spread out over the week, like one day's worth.
This is like a fraction of what he takes in one day, and it's like my whole week. It's crazy. No,
still can't get my mind off of that.
What I can't wrap my head around with those kinds of doses, like the high doses, when we're talking 10 grams, I just can't imagine where I would physically, logistically put all of that.
Logistically put it.
You know?
Not to mention, like, where's the money coming from to buy all this gear? A lot of fucking gear.
Yeah. I'm sure he has a lot of friends, though, so he probably doesn't pay for any of it, I bet.
Yeah, you know what? He probably refers a lot of people to these sources and he gets hooked up for free.
Yeah. There was a question a little ways down, and I can't remember. I can't find it offhand exactly. but he was talking, and this kind of relates, so I figured I'd go here. I believe it was Matt Bell. He was asking about site injections. And he said at one point you felt that you actually saw site-specific growth. Can you talk a little bit about that?
There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that, and I don't claim to know the science or mechanism behind it, but there's no doubt that where you inject has an influence on growth in that region. The first 10 years of my career, I only did glute injections, and my ass was fucking huge, and my upper body was moderately big. A friend of mine started teaching me how to do my delts and my buys and tries. And after several months, they were way bigger. And it's not just from the retention of the oil in that area. I'm not just talking about like a inflammatory response. I'm talking about actual muscle growth. My upper body definitely grew. I wasn't using more gear. I was just putting it in different spots. So it's not that my use escalated and we can attribute it to that. But yeah, it definitely brought my delts up, brought my arms up. And again, I don't claim to know why. But I do firmly believe that that works.
Do you think that for the, you know, there's some guys that will say if you use SEO, it's going to stretch the fascia and allow the muscle, the room to grow. Could it possibly be something along those lines?
No, because I was rotating.
Okay.
Shoulder, bicep, bicep, butt. So the frequency of the injections there was not enough to cause a buildup that would, you know, like the way you cycled your SEOs.
Yeah.
You're doing it every day so that it builds upon itself and then stretches that fascia. That really wasn't happening with the way I was injecting and rotating the body part. So no, I don't think it's from that.
Okay.
I mean, I put a half a cc in each shoulder. That's not stretching anything. I mean, not half a cc, cc and a half.
When I was a kid, I didn't know that my dad's friends were using gear. I used to go to the gym with my dad when I was like 6-7 years old. And I found out years later, you know, all the guys were using gear, and their belief, their bro science at least, somebody had told them that if you put your gear in your traps, then you would release a lot of testosterone that way.
How's that work?
I don't know. I don't know. But they were all doing trap shots.
It I'll tell you
scares
this,
the
though,
hell out of me.
If you put Winnie in your traps, they definitely grow.
Oh.
I don't know if you ever tried. It fucking hurts like hell.
Don't get an abscess. Yeah.
Yeah, and abscesses create really good muscle bellies.
Yeah.
I've had several. I've had several that I've had in my career.
There was a guy that I competed against one year in the summer in Arizona, and then I saw him at the November show that year, like kind of two shows, and he had, you know, he looked like he hadn't been training, and he hadn't. And he said he had done some Winnie shots in both delts, and he abscessed them both. Oof. And they basically just scooped out both of his deltoids. They're just completely.
Oh God, no!
It was like, oh, I know. It was like the indentation that a baseball would have made.
Oh,
it was that big.
Good God.
He lost a lot. I mean, there's nothing there. He's done competing. That was it. And he was a really good bodybuilder, and I felt really bad. It was terrible. Yeah. So
he must have let it go for a while.
I can't recall. This was, you know, 10, 15 years ago when I talked to him about it.
That happened to me.
Yeah, probably.
That happened on my outer tricep head. I was putting Winnie in my outer tricep and it was really working. I mean, the site enhancement is great. The inflammation is great. But then it got infected and I had to have it drained, and he drained this chocolate milk looking shit out of there.
Oh, my God. That had to be so painful. No.
But you know, I learned to recognize an infection really quickly. I had a lot of practice with that.
Yeah.
So I knew to go there immediately.
Did you quit water based, or is that still?
I haven't done it in a while, but I was thinking about maybe if I can get a good source for it. But it's so rare to find good liquid. I love that shit. Back in the day, I knew this girl who worked with horses. And she would bring me bricks of EQ and Winnie, like a 25-mile brick.
Wow.
Jeez.
She would steal it from the fucking client, and she would just give it to me.
Wow.
Oh my God, the ultimate source ever. I mean, it was all real Winnie, real EQ meant for the horses, man. Oh, God.
That was like 10 years of EQ right there.
Huh?
All at once. That was like 10 years worth of equipoise, like all at once.
Hey, yeah, it was 25 vials. Oh, man.
All right. We had another health question, and I've heard this a lot too. There's a lot of people that are focusing on gut health now, which I think is really cool. Right. We seem to be hearing more and more about it on the podcasts, talk about probiotics, fiber, digestive enzymes. We also hear the importance of sleep now more than ever. The thought being that if we are lacking in any one of these pieces of the gaining muscle puzzle, that we are going to miss out on gains. This is from Mark Davenport, and he's asking Dave if you can elaborate on that. And Scott, I'd love to hear you elaborate on it too. You know, we've been talking a lot about your CPAP and stuff.
Ooh. Well, it's no mystery that all stress manifests itself in the gut. And let's face it, competing or getting ready for a show or even training and dieting is a huge physical stressor. So I'm seeing it more and more in my office. There's people going on 2, 3, 4 shows a year. And really, you know, the fat, the carb-free diets and the double cardios and whatever else you have to do to be ready for a show, it takes its toll on your central nervous system, and it is a huge physical stressor. So it manifests itself in the gut always, which is why I'm a big believer in not abusing stimulant-based pre-workouts, which everyone fucking does, and taking a good probiotic and using prebiotics. I mean, these things, everything starts and ends in the gut. If you're not absorbing your food, you're not getting anything out of it. You know, elimination, absorption. So there's several things that I like people to do. First of all, 7-8 hours of actual sleep, REM sleep, which no one's getting anymore. No one's getting it anymore. Good micronutrient formula that you can take. Vitamins, minerals, coenzymes, enzymes. These things are necessary and they're always ignored. The big picture. Rest. Cycle your year. Have a part of your year where you do almost nothing and let everything reset. Your central nervous system, everything. Once your adrenals start to go, you're done. You're not going to lose fat. You're not going to gain muscle. You're going to be spinning your wheels, and I see it all the time. Take a section of your year and do almost nothing. Even if it's like six weeks, where you don't do much, then have it's part of the year where you do a moderate amount and build to the intensity part of your year. But you should cycle your year. You can't go balls to the wall all year.
Yeah.
Conversely, you can't do nothing all year either. But yeah, gut health, I think the compromise in gut health really has a lot to do with all the physiological stressors that are put on the body during prep. And it is a huge, because now I have people who can't digest their food. They have IBS, they're shit blood, all these things. And now they have to spend more money and time at the doctors than they do in the gym.
Are you seeing this more and more, the more people are competing and the more extreme diets you see?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they don't know how to manage all this stuff.
Okay.
And put it into perspective and have a balanced approach to it.
Well, where were we with probiotics, like, you know, back when you were younger? Because I feel like this is something that a lot of people are just learning about. Was that something that people talked about 15 years ago?
Not only that, but, you know, if you think about the food now versus 20 years ago, let's take chicken, for example.
Yeah.
Here's a great example. Fucking chicken breast nowadays versus, I don't know if I'm the only one who's noticing this, but the chicken breasts are the size of fucking pterodactyl tits, first. Second of all, they have the consistency of a Goodyear tire.
Oh, God, yeah.
And a weird, odd flavor to them. I don't know how I can possibly be the only person who's noticing this.
No, you're not, man. I'll only use, and unfortunately, it's like $7 a pound, the really expensive stuff that's hormone-free, antibiotic-free.
Well, my point is that, you know, How many bodybuilders are eating chicken 2 or 3, 4 times a day?
Sure.
They are. Now, who knows what this shit is actually these days? And now they're eating it 3, 4 times a day. So this, I do believe, has a lot to do with the digestive and gut issues that we're seeing as well. The quality of the food, I think, is instrumental in these problems as well.
Hmm. You see that too, Scott? Because you've been doing this for a little while.
Yeah. I think there's just a combination of things. Everything from, you know, quality of food and things that maybe, you know, we don't know are in the food, things that are being used.
Yeah, there's definitely things we don't know.
Antibiotics, that sort of stuff. Even if you look at like the literature on like organic food, it takes God like 7 or 8 years for a farm to have been, I'm not exactly sure if that's the number, but something like that, number of years before they can finally reach organic status. Because it takes that long to get the shit we know about out of the soil.
Wow.
Fruits and vegetables. Yeah, it takes quite a while. So that's kind of a big deal. But of course, and you can get some of that at Walmart now too. But, you know, these are people that are in it to make money, you know, so there's a possibility there are things there we don't know anything about that we'll only find about later. I mean, how many times do we find out about drugs or things, estrogenic compounds in our plastics?
It's not a possibility. It's a definite.
Yeah.
That there is something going on with these chicken breasts where they're taking a 4 ounce chicken breast and they're turning it into an 8 ounce chicken breast.
Yeah.
They really are. Those, you know, they're putting in it, but it's awful.
I don't know if there's any GMO going on with chickens. You know, have you ever seen what it looks like where those chickens are housed?
Yeah.
In the videos?
Yeah, it's
awful. I mean, it's just.
But, you know, it's interesting that chicken thighs are still chicken thighs. They taste the same to me as they always have. Chicken wings are still chicken wings. Pork tenderloin is still pork tenderloin. Steak is still steak. Ground beef is still ground beef. It doesn't look or taste or have different texture than it ever did. But chicken breasts are the one thing that really seem to have been fucked with for some reason. I don't know why, but they're inedible. I've actually had to take one of my staple foods that I've always eaten and loved, which is chicken breast, and actually eliminate it. I can't do it anymore.
So there are only five foods that work now?
There are only five foods now.
Holy shit.
I know. Can you believe that? I'm going to shrink.
We're heading in the wrong direction.
I'm going to shrink.
So what do you do then?
Tell me if you...
I've been eating chicken thighs. Fuck it.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, Scott.
I just trim like the big blobs of fat off of them. I trim that. I eat chicken thighs and they go down a lot easier and they taste like meat still.
Nice.
Chicken breast. Here's what was happening towards the end. It was so bad. As my meal would approach, like about an hour before my meal, I'd start getting nauseous at the thought of having meat. Then I'd sit there and it would take an hour for me to get a chicken breast down. And I would chew it up and I'd start gagging and start throwing it and I'd have to swallow it with water. And then sometimes it would come back up and I'm like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Why am I doing this? Eat something else, Dave.
Yeah, there's a sign.
Something
your body doesn't like that.
So now I'll rotate between pork tenderloin. I'll rotate between that, fish. And all these things are still what they were. They still are.
Okay.
But ground beef and turkey. Just works, you know.
If you spend a lot of money, you can still get good chicken, but it's so expensive.
I want to eat. There's no way I can afford it.
Yeah, yeah.
No way. I'm eating like a pound and a half a day.
What were you saying, Scott? You were starting to ask something, and I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, I've got a couple thoughts in my head. Now, one, the thing that I finally got around to start doing, I've been kind of taste testing some ground beef. I like to go. I did this when I lived in Arizona. I went right to the farmer. You know, and get it at the farmer's market.
Oh, really?
And I used to buy ground beef. There was a guy, Jojoba Beef Company, Jojoba Beans, grown in the desert out there, and he had these Africanized cattle, so they were adapted to that climate. And so they were perfect for living in Arizona. They lived to be like 9 or 10 years old, so they lived full lives. And he would select away some of the leaner beef for me. He just visually inspect it. And I'd buy 100 pounds from this guy at a shot, you know, and it was, I don't know, maybe $6 a pound. So like about 1 pound chubs, I get 100 of those. Sometimes I'd disseminate them to friends, but I would, you know, every 2 or 3 months I'd meet him or I'd meet him at the farmer's market and I'd buy 100 pounds of beef from him. And that was the way to go then. I found a couple companies, I think I found one here in Tampa that I can get to pretty easily and buy it that way. But chicken is expensive, but
yeah,
you know, the animals that are running around, they're just not going to grow the same way the ones that are jammed into the into those factory farms.
Yeah.
So they're not going to get as much meat. It costs more to raise them, blah, blah, blah. But the thing I was going to ask, if you guys have noticed, I don't see this all the time, but this is in like store-bought steak. Sometimes the red spray they put on there to prevent the browning. I had some ground beef or something. This may have been for one of my dogs because I was having to do some crock pot from a couple of my dogs. It was in my fridge for like 3 weeks. It was still red. It hadn't browned at all.
What does that tell you?
I was like, they're hiding something.
One of the last packages of chicken I bought at Costco sat in my refrigerator for like a month.
Yeah.
And was still okay. That's not okay.
No, God, no.
Yeah.
That's really wrong. You know, so you have to think about that for a second. If I bury this chicken breast and then dig it up 20 years later, it'll probably still look just like this.
If you just combine, like you get up in the morning and eat your food sources like that, and you're just drinking tap water, let's say, or you're drinking water at the from the drinking fountain, and then you're taking in supplements, you know, that who knows what's in them, maybe tainted with things that make them work better.
That's the other
thing. Combine all the liver stress, the chemical stresses, you know, can be sky high. And then if those are thrown off your sleep, you can't sleep well, everything compounds. And next thing you know, you're chemically and recovery-wise, you're a mess.
That was the other thing I mentioned was the gear nowadays, everything being underground, you just don't know the purity of what you're getting. So I really do think that has a lot to do with gut health these days as well. Because although you are getting something anabolic, you don't know really what you're getting and the purity of it. And 9 times out of 10, it's not good.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. I've seen it in my own life.
We're doing because they automatically assume that their black market gear is underdosed. They do twice as much.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
That just leads to problems.
Yeah, I don't know how toxic, you know, benzyl alcohol is in of itself, but if you're doing 10,000 milligrams, 10 grams, you know, what is that? 10 grams would be, let's say 200 milligrams per mil. So that's 5 mils. That's 50 mils. It's like 20% benzyl alcohol. So, you know, you're doing 10 milliliters of benzyl alcohol, if I did the math right, a week.
Yeah, that can't be good.
Yeah. And it's bypassing, you know, you're missing out on the first pass through the liver because it's going right into your body. So it's getting into your blood. Yeah. So just that enough to make you feel like shit, I would think.
Right. So then you take that, then you take all the contaminants in the quote unquote chicken breast and the other foods that we're eating. Then you take into account the other supplements you're taking and the things you're running through your body. And then you take into account the central nervous system degradation from all the work that you're doing. This is not a healthy sport.
Yeah, it can be. And I just thought the benzyl alcohol wouldn't be that high. That's the benzyl benzoate I was thinking of, but still, the point's there. Add it all up.
Sure. What's the difference?
And that's assuming that you're talking about like a traditionally made product. Nowadays, you have all these new solvents that allow you to make, you know, 400, 500 milligrams per milliliter, things that aren't even tested on humans yet, you know?
It's ridiculous. Yeah, like test 600. I'm like, really?
Right, right.
You need 600 milligrams of pop? Why? What's that going to feel like?
All right, I'm going to move on to fasted cardio. Dave, discuss fasted cardio. That's all she's got. This is from Kelly.
Discuss it?
Yeah, discuss it. I want to hear all about it. Tell me all about it.
Cardio. How hard is that?
You what?
You get up in the morning, you don't eat, and you do cardio. There, it's discussed.
Do you have to do fasted cardio to get somebody into absolutely peeled condition, or could they still do it post-workout? How big is the difference?
Again, this is a broad question because it depends on the person.
Yeah.
Some people walk around shredded.
Walking their dog, right?
Yeah. As we know,
yeah.
Some people can get away with doing it post-workout. Some people do it whenever they can fit it in and it can work. But personally, I think that fasted cardio is amazing. It almost immediately speeds up my metabolism. Hmm. It works across the board. I look at it this way. You know, there are new things coming down the pike all the time. There are scientific studies now that claim that fasted cardio is catabolic or, you know, it doesn't show any clear benefits over doing it fed in a fed state, et cetera, et cetera. Bodybuilders have always been really on top of what works and what doesn't work, anecdotally, because they're really in tune with their bodies. If fasted cardio was not the best way to get shredded, why would 99% of the top bodybuilders and fitness people in the world still be doing it?
Good point.
Why would they still be doing it? They would have tried, because we
actually have an answer to that.
We try
an answer to that, actually. And you're going to like it, I think. I think because the best bodybuilders are willing to do whatever it takes, and that's one of those things.
And that's the
so it goes hand in hand.
My point.
Yeah, I know. I'm agreeing with you. Whether or not there's a physiological advantage, they're doing everything they can to make it happen. So it makes sense that they would do that.
Right. Who the fuck wants to get up at 5 a.m. and do their cardio when you can just tack it on to the end of your when you can do Tabata cardio in 5 minutes at the end of your workout and scientifically burn just as much fat because some study that was done on 5 obese sedentary women said that you can. You know
those
what I mean?
Those intervals are not easy. I'll tell you that much, though. Have you done that? I think you have.
I know it's not easy.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry. I just don't believe that 5 minutes of anything is going to produce what you can do in an hour of something else. I just don't. It would be wonderful if that was true. I fucking swear it would be great. But it's just, I don't believe that it is. There's always going to be that segment of society that can get away with it because of their genetics. And they're going to be like, well, I proved that it works. No, you prove that there's a segment of society for whom it works. And there's a segment of society for whom anything fucking works. But generally speaking, go ahead.
I was going to say, I wonder a question for you. I wonder what would happen if you, instead of your cardio you do now, if you replace that with intervals, expending the same number of calories, according to, you know, the best estimate you can get from your heart rate.
Right.
Wonder what would happen, you know?
Well, what would probably happen is I'd probably lose fat. I just
think you get leaner.
Now we're talking about preference, because I do believe that interval training is great. And I think it works. And you can do it in a fed state. Or you can do it fasted. However, my preference is the steady state, lower intensity, boring ass. Fast cardio. I prefer. Right.
Back on raising the bar, you would hop on your bike, you know, your stationary bike in the morning, and you would knock out like 30 minutes, just balls to the wall. You don't do that anymore, or is that part of the routine still?
I did that just this morning.
No kidding. So that's what you mean by steady state.
What'll happen is that will slowly increase until I'm doing an hour. So at my peak, I'm always doing an hour. My cardio starts at 30 minutes for me. Anything less than that, I don't even consider a cardio.
Okay.
The cardio starts at 30 minutes for me because I do no intensity steady state. So you need the duration when you do it that way. So I'll do 30 minutes to start, and then it evolves. Each month I'll add like maybe 10 minutes until I'm at an hour a day in the morning. And that usually takes me where I want to be. It always has. I usually don't have to do more than that. There have been a couple shows where I've had to do doubles, where I'm doing another half hour at night because of that last little bit of stubborn fat on my lower back. But yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. If I'm burning the same number of calories in less time, would that yield the same results? I've never performed that experiment on myself, so I don't know how to give a definitive answer, but I do believe that I probably would get shredded doing it that way.
Yeah, it'd just be interesting. You know, there's a dose response. You know, the longer duration cardio will produce kind of the same changes in training adaptations that shorter duration, higher intensity will.
Right.
You know, so you'll get in shape faster doing that, probably, because the intensity will be higher, the same amount of caloric expenditure, but higher intensity efforts. You'll get in shape.
My weight training was always so intense, positive and negative failure, and I was doing that every day. And I was thinking, well, you know, I don't want to have two bouts of high, high intensity shit every fucking day. Again, it's about central nervous system preservation.
That makes sense.
So when I was training balls to the wall, positive and negative failure, I said, at least my cardio can be lower intensity. And that worked for me. Yeah. I didn't have two bouts of exercise every fucking day wearing me down. There's no way I'd make 20 weeks that way.
Yeah.
That makes sense. What?
You don't need it. You can have so much energy expenditure after training like that, weight training like that. You know, you can burn 800 to 1,000 calories.
But it's not happening. When I'm done training, I'm just on the floor laying there. And that's what I'm doing. I'm not doing HIIT training after I fuck. Plus, mentally, the way I tune in, I don't want to be doing my weight training thinking, oh, I have to do my HIIT cardio after this. I need to just be able to say, I'm doing these three exercises, balls to the wall, and then I'm done.
Yeah.
And I already did my cardio this morning, so it's done.
Yeah, I think Scott's talking about just the calories you burn from that exercise alone, you know, doing post-cardio.
Hey, absolutely.
So how's your training changed now? I think we had a couple questions along those lines, and I'm really curious to know, too. You talked at the very beginning about the various injuries you've had. First of all, tell us, because some of the guys that are listening, they might not know what's gone on in the last 18 months for you. What has happened, and how has that changed your training?
June of 2016, I went to stand up out of my chair in my office. As I stood up, I put all my weight on my right leg, and my patellar tendon completely ruptured.
Good God.
My quad rolled up, my kneecap fell over to the side, and I plopped on the ground and could not move. Whew. I called 911. The ambulance scooped me up onto a stretcher and took me to the hospital. I had complete reparation surgery on my right leg, 6 month recovery. So I was out. 6 months recovery came and went, and my right leg was healed. I was getting ready to do legs. I did one leg workout. I was really happy about that. That weekend, a dog jumped up on me and knocked me over, and my left quadricep tendon completely ruptured.
The opposite one.
The opposite one. What? I had the same exact injury in the other leg days after I was completely healed from the first one. Mm. So I had to do the whole thing over again. And it was just really devastating. It was really devastating. So that ended up being an entire year right there. And right after I got back in the gym after that, after both of my legs were healed, I slowly realized that I was developing a pretty bad rotator cuff tear that systematically ruled out exercises that I could do to the point where I could only do the chest press, the pin selectorized chest press machine for chest. Mm. That was all I could do. I said, I got to do something about this. So I had surgery 4 weeks ago.
Nice.
On my shoulder. So the long and the short of it, when you ask me my training, and how it looks today, for the past year and a half, I have not trained. I've just been healing.
Right on. That sucks, man.
It really does. It is what it is. I'm going to come back. I'm healing. I'm taking the time. I'm taking two steps back so that I can take three forward. And that's how I'm looking at it. So, whereas I've spent the last year and a half healing from these major injuries, I'm fixed now. You know, they repaired the tendons.
Yeah.
They repaired my shoulder. It's repaired. So now I can move forward and just do and modify my. I'm not going to be able to train like I used to. And I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't have to. I know how to build muscle. I know how to build muscle doing many different methodologies. And I don't have to be locked into one way of doing it because I'm very versatile. And I can come up with something that will work around my former injuries. That's what I'm going to do. I haven't formulated it yet because I'm back in the gym like 2 days now.
Nice.
So I can see how things go. I'm not able to do any upper body yet because my shoulder's still healing. I'm still doing PT work for that. But I'm doing legs. I've done legs twice now.
How do they feel? How do the quads feel getting blood back in them and stuff? Yeah.
Oh, the quads feel great. My muscles are like, yes, this is fantastic. My tendons and joints are like, fuck you. So yeah, I mean, I really have to, I only use two plates on each side of the leg press machine. I did sets of 30.
That's fine. It's a great start.
It worked. I had a huge pump.
I bet.
Let's go. I know I can build muscle with sets of 30. I can. That's what I'll do.
Dave, did you tear the patellar ligament where the patella connects to the tibia, or did you tear above the patella?
I tore the tendon that attaches the femoral tendon, the tendon that attaches the quadricep to the kneecap.
Did any of the muscle get torn or disrupted there, or was it purely at the tendon. So the muscle bellies were still intact.
Muscle bellies were intact. It was the tendon. The tendon became completely detached. It was the quad tendon, not the patellar tendon.
Yeah. What do you think caused that? Why do you think you think that might be gear related over the course of years?
I'll tell you what I think caused it. I think it was a common, it was a perfect storm of things. We know that gear use over the years compromises the connective tissue. We know that. So that's number one. Number two is repetitive movement. I always started my leg workout with high rep, high weight, ballistic style leg extensions for 30 years. Now you got to imagine the stack plus a person standing on it. you're doing, you know, body English, you know, your ass coming up off the seat. Is it effective? Hell yeah. It builds some fucking quads. Think about that tendon having to do that movement, that unnatural movement that does not appear in nature ever. 1 million times with all that weight. You're wearing grooves in your joint. You're wearing that tendon down. I believe that when I stood up out of that chair and my quadriceps snapped, that tendon was frayed to the point where it's just ready to go. The other one, if that dog hadn't jumped up on me, it would have went in the gym at some point because it was the same way.
Yeah.
So
could have been worse. You could have had, 10 plates on a leg press when that happened.
Oh my God.
It could have crushed you.
Crushed me. You're right. So both
there was a guy years ago who I competed with who had that happen. He competed in a wheelchair, but that had happened to him. And it was bad. He broke his femur. Yeah, this was in the NPC out in California, and they somehow judged him as if his lower body matched his upper. And his story was that he had had at least one quad tear. Either way, the weight came down, and it cracked his femur, and he broke both ankles. And he got just crushed by the thing. But he wanted to compete, so he just did it in a wheelchair, and his upper body looked great, But he'd had that exact go down.
Jeez,
so it could have been worse for you.
Remember when Jean-Pierre Fou? Remember when he tore at the same fucking time?
Yeah,
I can't even imagine. He was an invalid. He had to be because I was completely bedridden with like a piss bucket and everything for a month after each one of my surgeries, and I had still one good leg. So I can't even imagine how disruptive to your life that is.
What kind of lightning?
Have you tried BPC 157?
Yeah, I've heard about that, and I've been really concerned. I haven't done it, but I think I actually might. I don't know how. Do you have to take that right after the injury happens, or can you do it at any time?
It has a multitude of effects on connective tissue. Like kind of the more they study it, the more they find it's helpful with just healing in general. But you could use that at any point.
Good source for it. I want to make sure that what I'm getting is real because I'm sure there's a lot of bogus peptides out there now.
Yeah.
So I can get it from a place I know is legit.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I'm going to try to lighten the mood up here a little bit because that's very depressing and everybody's going to be scared to leg press after this. We were talking a while ago about social media and talking about, the climate and everything with bodybuilding, how it's changed. What are your thoughts, though, Dave? Has social media – I'm not even going to ask the question. So this is a question from Lauren Carson. She asks, do you think social media has made bodybuilding and fitness a better or worse place? I'm not even going to ask that. I'm going to ask, how much worse is it because of social media?
Well, actually,
I mean, can we ever come back?
Surprise you with my answer. But I think it's good and bad. Just like many things in this world, nothing's either all good or all bad.
Yeah.
It's good in the sense that someone like me who has, makes their living from his presence and, needs to be out there.
Yeah.
Stay relevant and keep your image. I can do it for free.
Yeah.
Here I have Facebook. I have 7,000 followers there. I have Instagram. You have a way that you can market yourself to like-minded people. Mm. It's not like mailing out mailers to 600 houses in your area, which everyone just takes and throws in the trash can. And that's what we used to do, where I used to take out an ad in the local newspaper. That's bullshit. I have 7,000 like-minded people on Facebook that I can make a post about a before and after of a client I just worked with, and all those people see it. That's invaluable.
Yeah.
It's great. You can do whatever you want, be whatever you want, like we were talking about earlier on social media. On Instagram, I get to post little snippets every day of what I'm doing, how I'm feeling, what I'm, you know, my post-workout shake, my morning cardio, and just be in touch with all these people all the time. Back in the day, you couldn't do that. You had to do the other methodologies of advertising and promotion, but now you don't. Conversely, and the downside is that now you have people, and as a bodybuilding purist, this really pisses me off, but you can be famous in this industry, making a great living, and be essentially nothing. Just have an Instagram presence. And like you said, take good pictures with the proper lighting in your bathroom. Do that every day, and you're a superstar.
Yeah.
Instagram. You know, I come from an era where you had to build a physique and go out on stage and earn your, you know, earn your keep in the industry. But now, you know, social media does it for you, and you really don't have to be anybody. You don't even have to ever have competed to be a superstar. It's kind of disgusting.
It's weird.
So now you have people that, you know, I would trip over in the gym and not even notice. And they're making more money on Instagram than I am in the fitness industry. So that's the downside. Again, there's good and bad to everything. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I use social media all the time to promote my business. I like it. It's great. And then I see these posers and I'm like, oh, God, come on.
Yeah.
Who are you? What have you done? What have you actually done? And you have 26,000 views. Where are these people? So, yeah, it's rough.
All right. What, and this is one I think you'll have some thoughts on here, Scott. And I know, Dave, you don't like training, but.
I don't hate it. It's just not a love. It's not a passion to actually train. Looking a certain way is a passion of mine, but the things I had to do, I wasn't in love with them.
Okay.
Sorry, that really upset you, didn't it?
my vision of you shattered. I don't know, man.
I know you like mentioned it three times.
Like, there goes your role.
No, those of us actually like working out.
Yeah. All right. So training plateaus. What do you guys suggest somebody does if they find themselves up against a plateau? And I'm guessing he's saying that he can't break through, you know, 315 for X amount of reps. What does he need to do to try
just
to get better?
Stop working out and come back to it later.
Yeah. You think, well, honestly though, you think a break maybe? A break
just
maybe?
Just do something else for a while, then come back to it. You'll be stronger.
Yeah. Is it that important? Is it in your mind and with your experience, is it that important that you break through these plateaus, or can you just kind of, okay.
It's not important it's not important in the least. So my actual answer is, unless your goal is to bench press more weight, then you need to figure out a way to overcome that plateau, because that is a strength plateau. I don't feel like it's necessary. I can build, honestly, I could build championship pecs doing push-ups every day. I know that for a fact. I don't need to do 315-pound bench presses. I would do drop sets. I would do supersets. You can build muscle any one of a number of ways that don't include breaking through strength plateaus. The only way breaking through a strength plateau is important is if strength is important to you. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, I've always used the weights as a tool to just create overload. And you can create overload without actually, you know, using the biggest dumbbells in the gym. So honestly, if he's at a plateau, if he's a bodybuilder and purely going for aesthetics, if he's at a plateau with 315 and can't get more weight than that, then he should just work on getting more reps with that, or getting 315 for as many reps as he can and dropping it down to 225 and doing a burnout. Build some pecs.
So for you, it's got to be one element. It's got to be nutrition then, is what I'm guessing. I know you lean heavy towards nutrition.
It's intensity. It's intensity, not weight.
Okay.
It's intensity. Are you working that muscle to full positive and negative failure? You don't need a whole lot of weight to do that, but you need intensity. You need to be able to take it past that point of the lactic acid burning and all that, you know, getting into that zone where, to me, the set begins when the burning becomes unbearable. Then I start counting, that kind of thing. You know what I mean? And then obviously the nutrition is key, and that's where a lot of people miss the boat. But that's a whole different thing. Getting through any sort of plateau is usually your diet's off.
I feel like with your mindset, you have the best potential to be able to recover from these injuries, because there are people out there. I have friends that just think that they have to lift heavy. That's the only way that they're going to ever be able to put muscle on. And obviously, if you have a setback like you've had, just getting in there and lifting heavy is not going to be the answer.
That is called a non-serving paradigm. That is something a core belief that you're locked into that is not true. And it's going to hinder you, because guess what? A lot, like, take Kevin Lerone for an example. He's trying to make this comeback, and I wish to fuck I could train him, because he's being really stupid about it. He is trying to make this comeback at 53, doing the same exact shit that damaged him when he was in his 20s. Mm. He had a pec tear in his 20s from training like that, and now he's doing the same fucking thing. I saw him doing 405 incline. Dude, you're going to tear the other pec or both pecs or your tricep. And it's not a matter of if, it's when it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And he's squatting, trying to squat 500. His knees are shot. I'm like, dude, get on the leg press. Put your feet together, totally together. Come all the way down to your knees and your neck. Do 30 reps. See how much weight you really fucking need on that thing. For chest, get underneath some 60-pound dumbbells and fly until you can't fly anymore. Look at the pump you'll get. You don't need 405 in an incline anymore. I swear to God, his physique would be better if he actually took a step back and rethought how to train. He's just going to damage himself more. It's just a matter of time before there's a major career-ending tear in his body. On the way down in a squat, he's going to tear his quad or something like that. So he's a perfect example of being locked into that mindset where you don't really need to do that. You got to revamp your training. And this is a point in my life where I have to, it remains to be seen how I'm going to end up training, but it's going to be vastly different. And that's fine. I'm okay with it. To me, the end result
is, I don't know if people tell you this all the time, but the research actually, people are listening probably wondering what I think about this, but the research actually supports what you're saying. They're getting more and more studies out there where they're using like 30% of a one rep max. Mm-hmm. And the reps, if you actually look into the studies, they're doing like sets of 23 to 30 high rep sets. And you're producing muscle growth just as well as you do with 80% of one rep max, where you're getting 8 or 10 reps per set. Mm-hmm. This is all the short term stuff. They don't do studies that last years or decades long. But if that's any indicator, the thing that people don't really realize is that even a relatively light load in the gym is it's still a load way beyond what we normally do during the course of our day-to-day life. Unless you work in construction or you've got some sort of manual labor job, you hardly would ever pick up anything that you could only pick up 20 or 30 times. It's rare. And if you do, you'd only do it once or twice and you put it back down again.
Put it back down, right.
So
it's an overload.
The effort... that is an overload to just keep. And plus, I always can say it's an unnatural act to pick something up and put it down, pick it up and put it down, pick it up, put it down, pick it up, put it down, pick it up, put it down. That's a bizarre thing to do. Unless you're moving furniture around for someone who doesn't know where they want it, that's you know, just like creating a callus in the muscle. So even a relatively light load is still a load, and the metabolic stress is still an overload of sorts.
Where in nature do you experience continuous tension for over a 30 rep range? You don't.
Right.
Where there's no break in the flexion of the muscle, like you do in your workout, you do continuous tension. You know, the muscle's under stress the entire time. Time under tension. Where does that happen?
When you're wrestling somebody, if literally in your life and death struggle, or like, you know, you're in ancient Greece and you're wrestling someone, and you're like, you know, in that struggle where you're almost about to get pinned or choked out or whatever, and you're just fighting for your life.
Right.
That's when it makes it your body would adapt. And that's sort of, we're imposing that kind of like extraordinary stress on the muscle by lifting the way we do with continuous tension.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a very rare thing. So that's why it works so well to evoke adaptation.
Yep.
Yeah.
I agree.
Guys, we're about out of time here. We got through most all of the questions and some of the stuff that we didn't get to, we actually just covered through conversation. So
worked out
pretty well. Right. I think you planned it that way, Dave. You're an old pro at this stuff.
This is exactly where I needed to end it too.
Yeah, perfect. What do you got going on for your day? Tell us what's happening in Dave Pulcinella's life right now, today. What are you doing?
I'm gonna food prep after this for the day.
No chicken.
No chicken. And then I start my work day.
Nice.
2 o'clock. I start clients, and I will be seeing clients till tonight.
Nice.
Will we be able to see the documentation on your Instagram story every step of the way?
Every step of the way, or else it didn't happen.
Awesome. Sweet.
I want to see all those meals lined up on your countertop.
Yeah. Because if you don't take a picture of it, you didn't eat them.
Yeah.
Right.
What about you, Scott?
Egg pulsinator.
What do you got going on today,
Scott?
I'm
going to train.
What are you training?
I'm going to train. Lower body.
Nice. All right, guys. Yeah. Dave, this has been fun, man. Hey, for everybody who wants to hear more from you, see more from you, where can they find you on social media and how can they reach out to you?
PulseAdvancedNutrition.com or look me up on Facebook or Instagram. I'm under Dave Pulcinella on both.
And what about the Raising the Bar movies? Where can they see that stuff?
MikePulcinella.com is available as downloads now.
Oh, nice.
1, 2, 3. And Raising the Bar 4 is free on YouTube.
Yeah, I highly suggest everybody checks that out. You know, I did have one more question because you mentioned Mike. Who's the prettier of the Pulcinella brothers?
Oh, definitely him.
Okay. That was actually Mike submitted that question. One. Yeah.
I'm going to stroke his ego a little bit.
How's he doing? I remember you got him in pretty good shape a while ago. Was he still training?
He was 40 when we did that. He's 56 now. Yes, he still trains. He still runs. He runs bleachers, and his joints are a lot more fresh than mine because he didn't start till he was 40.
Nice.
Right.
I started when I was 13. There's a big difference.
Nice.
Wow.
All right. Yeah. Anything else we're missing here, Scott?
Just thanks, Dave. This was fun, man.
Absolutely.
Thanks
I enjoyed
for,
it.
Taking the time.
I would like to come back.
Absolutely. And I think everybody also enjoyed that, too. We had a huge amount of feedback and stuff. A lot of people are going to be excited for this show.
Awesome.
So, guys, for the Advices Radio Network, this has been another episode of Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson. I'm Scott McNally with special guest Dave the Pulcinator Pulcinella. We'll see you soon.
Voices Radio Network.